All right, we are back live now with Connections, and my great pleasure to bring on Channel 5 WCVB-TV's chief meteorologist, Harvey Leonard. And Harvey Leonard, welcome to MSO.
Thank you, Rick. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Great to be talking with you, and I should point out that Harvey Leonard, of course, one of the most familiar faces in all of New England. Many, many awards as a meteorologist, and as Bill Newell was saying earlier, one of the most trusted guys on television. But that said, I have to apologize to you, Harvey, because I'm sure that down in Needham, you've probably heard me screaming from Gloucester epithets at you or through the television set when my ski report is not what I want it to be. And my wife chides me constantly. Well, not constantly. It's not that often. But my wife chides me and says, you know, it's not Harvey's fault. So I apologize for those screams that I have directed at you over some of the years.
Well, it's okay. You know, my hearing's not as good as it used to be, so I'm not hearing them all anymore.
Well, I'm of the same generation, and I've got one bad ear as well. But I can't wait to ask you some questions because you know you've been through some of the technological changes and so forth. But first, I want to ask you about your own interest in meteorology and maybe how you got started with it initially.
Well, basically, it's been an interest and a passion ever since I can remember being, young enough to actually have a memory. As a little kid, always fascinated by the storms, and most especially the winter storms, the snowstorms. So for me, in terms of the most exciting, most dramatic weather, I would say winter storms would be number one. Tropical storms and hurricanes would be number two, then would come the severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. But obviously those are the most impactful, although cold waves, heat waves, I mean, they do have effects, obviously, on people as well. But definitely the winter storms. I can't explain why. Something in the blood. Don't know if maybe I was conceived during a snowstorm.
Uh-oh.
Or born on a snowstorm. I don't think so, but who knows? But it's just there. And there's, a lot of people have a big interest in weather, but there's a comparatively small percentage that are semi-obsessed, and I'm kind of in that percentage, especially, again, when it comes to storms and winter storms.
Well, I know that comes across, obviously, on television, and I want to ask you, Bill asked me to ask you this, before the technology that you have now, in Gloucester, the Cape Ann area, there used to be, back in the 60s and 70s, a number you could dial to get the local weather. And I think the man's name was Barker. And it was he was called the Old Salt. And he said in a newspaper article that back in that era, the best you could hope for an accurate forecast would be 6 hours out. That was it. Now, if we go back to the early days, Harvey, is there a particular story that you can remember where you got it right with the technology you had, but maybe some of the other guys didn't?
Well, I guess in my case, it would have to be related to the blizzard of 78. Now, we did have computer models at that time, but, you know, they've come a long way. Since then, we have much better observing system to get initial sets of data into those weather computers. We have faster processing power to run these computer models more frequently. So it's come a long way. We did have computer models, but as a forecaster in those days, you would have to make much greater leaps from what you were literally seeing in those computer models to what you might actually have to forecast. Now, it's closer to the idea of tweaks, modifications, using your past experience, knowing the idiosyncrasies of the local climate, but the computer models are even greater assets to us now by a long shot than they were then. But I mean, I was maybe a few years removed from graduate school in college, and, you know, I studied meteorology, and so I was very attuned to the very latest that was available at that time. And you had to be able to understand that a storm might form, even a very strong one, or become a very strong one, and you're making the forecast about that without the storm even in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we go back to the late 70s, it was helpful to me to be of the generation I was at that time, being young, because I was, you know, closer to being and learning about all this and able to apply it, plus the fact that what I was seeing was so classic in the sense of getting cold, bitter cold air established before the storm, cold high pressure in Canada. We know in weather, we have to be able to know what's going on upstairs, meaning thousands of feet above us. And it turns out that disturbances up there in the atmosphere are what trigger the storms that develop on the surface. So seeing that something very vigorous was going to be happening so-called upstairs, I knew that it's going to translate to a storm downstairs, meaning at the surface and near the Carolina or Virginia coast with the cold high pressure to the north. That's the classic setup. And so sometimes you're looking at weather patterns and they're a little more confusing or they're subtle or the disturbances aren't so pronounced or so strong. I would kind of call that like mixed vegetables. But what I was looking at for that setup was basically meat and potatoes. One big, enormous cold high pressure area and one what was going to be very intense storm. And we were in just the right spot between that storm to the south and the cold high pressure to the north to get the squeeze play of northeasterly winds and all the moisture that the storm would produce. And we have that huge moisture source of the Atlantic Ocean to the east of us. So, you know, that became over time because we've got the video clips, you know, from several days before the storm, which become hilarious in terms of what I look like then compared to now. But that's a sad story. We don't have to get into it. But the idea of the storm. And so it wasn't as the forecasts weren't widespread like they would be now. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see as huge a difference in the forecast, meteorologist to meteorologist, station to station, now compared to then, because the computer models have come a long way. And the word is going to get out more uniformly and earlier. So many more modes, ways to communicate, you know, digital and so on. Where then it was basically your three TV stations, you know, 4, 5, and 7, and you have to wait for those scheduled newscasts. Right. Now there are many more of them. So now, you know, information is on demand. Then you had to wait, and there are only a few different stations and a few different meteorologists that are going to be making those forecasts. So I think it really stood out for those who saw it at the time, and for those who didn't, who've seen when we do our anniversary report on the storm. By now, most people have seen, you know, those clips and understood, you know, that, you know, it was a horrendous storm, and it was horrendous on the North Shore. I mean, the coastal situation was just horrendous.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware of it. I remember it. Josh?
Yeah, Harvey, I wanted to ask you a question about your forecasting. Is there any part of what you do there's a uniqueness because it's New England, that you develop an expertise? These are things that are more prone to New England that wouldn't happen in Oklahoma or somewhere else?
Well, yeah, definitely so, because we're, first of all, we're at the latitude, okay, you know, with often cold air to the north coming from Canada. We can certainly have warm air from the south. And we're going to wind up near the battle zone with some frequency, which means we're going to have action. We're going to have storms. We have a tremendous moisture source to the east, the Atlantic Ocean. And so that adds moisture to the storms. But also, when we get like a northeast wind coming from the northeast, it could be coming from hundreds of miles out in the ocean or originating there. And so that means that wind and ocean can have hundreds of miles to pass over. Waves can build, winds can strengthen, so we get very potentially very impactful type of storms and nor'easters. We also think about how eastern Massachusetts juts out. If you look at the east coast of the United States, you then realize that you can have a hurricane around the Bahamas that could move northward, and the first landmass it would touch would actually be either Long Island, New York, or the south coast of New England. So
okay.
It's like a direct shot if you get the jet stream to be able to direct that storm northward. And even though our ocean waters are cooler, a little cooler even in the summer than what's ideal for hurricanes, a lot of times the storms are accelerating, being drawn up by a very strong jet stream from south to north. So the faster it moves, the less time it spends over the slight time it has to weaken. So we can get hit very impactfully, and it can come upon us very quickly. Those storms might be moving about 15 miles an hour in the tropics, but if they accelerate up the East Coast, they can move up to 60 miles per hour. So the effects don't occur over as long a period of time, but they can be very severe for the period of time that they are occurring here.
You know, I you are a terrific explainer and storyteller. I'm gathering that, looking at your biography here, that you do teach. And also, I think a key component of what you do is similar to what sportscasters do when they're broadcasting an event. You don't read from a script. You have to assimilate all the information that you've been working on over the hours, and then you have to put that into 3 or 4 minutes of something that some dummy like me can understand.
Well, the last part of what you said is incorrect, of course. But, yes, it's true. But remember that that's also my area of so-called expertise, mm-hmm. of passion, of interest, and experience. And I guess the thing is, for some reason, the passion is still there. I mean, I don't think that will ever really will really end for me, because it's just a part of who I am. So, you know, if you're really interested in something, if you've educated yourself and doing your best to keep up with what's going on in the field, you know, you're doing something you like, you're working at a really terrific TV station to work at with wonderful people. I mean, in the studio there, it's really not like being on television. It's like you're hanging out with your friends.
That's cool, yeah.
And you're doing your job at the same time. So the atmosphere is set so nice at the station, and we're allowed to be who we are, and obviously that's great because that gives you freedom of expression, but we're all also very passionate and professional about our work.
Absolutely.
That combination, you know, it's great. So when you work in an atmosphere like that, it makes it, more joyous, and it's great. Fortunately, I'm still doing it.
Sounds like a great play. And, you know, that's consistent. I've had the good fortune to meet Natalie Jacobson back in the day, and my son, who was Down syndrome, met her on with his mom down on Nantucket, I think it was, for a concert, and she said, come on up here, it was Boston Pops, and she was wonderful, and they've seen him in other events. We know Mike Lynch very well. We met Bob Halloran yesterday, and there is that sense of camaraderie there. Now, I got to ask you, you know, go back to that 78 storm here for 1 second, and maybe other storms. Did you get stuck in the studio?
I did. Now, the story behind that for me is that storm hit on a Monday and Tuesday, and I had been talking about it on the air beginning the Thursday prior, which is really unheard of in those days.
Okay. Yep.
And then I talked it up a little bit more on Friday, and then Saturday night I was absolutely convinced that, you know, we were going to get nailed. So I did not work Sunday, the day before the storm, and the storm strikes on Monday, and it was Sunday night around 11:30. As soon as our newscast was over, I wasn't on it. I was on Channel 7 in those days.
Mm-hmm.
I said to my wife, you know, I was all packed up with a suitcase, and I said, I'm going in, you know, to the station because I have to be on early tomorrow morning. And I said, I have no idea when I'm going to be back. And she was 6 months pregnant. She didn't appreciate that remark very much. And so, you know, I kissed her, and then I was in Boston for a week. So, and that's what happened. They put us up at the Parker House, and that was the story. So, you know, of course, I was on that morning, and then we wound up, you know, in as continuous a coverage as you could do in those days. During the second day of the storm on Tuesday, and then I remember we did, you know, big special, and then I remember being at Hull, you know, doing a part of the special from there where all the coastal damage was. So, it was an amazing time in Boston.
I remember.
Following that storm, it was just cold and dry for like 3 weeks. And even in the city, the snow stayed pretty white for a long time. Because it was so nice and cold. You weren't getting much melting, but you had this nice, clear, clean, cold air mass. And people were actually cross-country skiing
yes.
on the streets of Boston.
Yes, yes, yes. And all over the place. I remember it vividly because I had a young family at the time as well. I want to ask you about your work day now, because It obviously has changed over the years. I know that formerly working in my summer job, I'm a retired math teacher, a high school math teacher, but my summer job was working at a local radio station in Salem. And to put together a five-minute newscast sometimes would take almost an hour with the old editing equipment we had and so on. What you do with the graphics, the videos, the audio, the green screen or blue screen, whatever it is, I don't even know how you learned how to do that. What's your typical day like now, Harvey, in this day and age?
Okay, well, the difference is, you know, going back, you know, several decades ago, basically on my shift, you had a 6 p.m. news and an 11 p.m. news, two newscasts a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm now on eight newscasts a day in the same shift. So, and they're all broken down as like half-hour newscasts so that each individual half-hour can stand on its own merit. So for me, it's 4 p.m., 4:30 p.m., 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m., 6 p.m., 2.5 hours straight. Then we get a half hour break when the network news is on, but we have a 7 p.m. news as well, which is really highly watched. It seems to be very appreciated by people who are not home in time to see a 6 p.m. news from work. So so during that time, it's pretty continuous. And not only that, but it's not usually just one appearance in the half hour.
Yep.
Because weather now usually has a brief, looking at the next 12 to 24 hours occurs early in the newscast. Then you have your full newscast, a full weathercast, you know, a little deeper into the half hour. So it's many, many more appearances. So our graphic systems, fortunately, have now been designed and upgraded in a way that it makes it easy for us to be on the air that frequently and have the latest information be able to be displayed graphically, by the idea of having as much as possible automated. So, for example, most of our radar and satellite imagery and temperature maps that are current temperatures, are all of this was set up initially so that it gives us more time to help with the forecast. And there's still certain maps, some projected maps and things like that, that we're massaging and using our abilities to create graphics. But we've created as much as we can in an automated way, because speed of preparation is essential when you're on the air so much.
I think it's mind-boggling to see how often you're on and how you can update this stuff. It's just incredible knowing, you know, some of the stuff that might be going on behind the scenes. And speaking of which, can you tell me a little bit about your staff? Because you're the main man. You pull the trigger. But what's it like working with or who else works with you on the team?
Oh, yeah. We really have it really is a great team. Now, we have Cindy Fitzgibbon, who's on the Eye Opener News at noontime, and she is phenomenal. I mean, she's just, what you see on the air is what you get. She's an incredible person. She's a terrific meteorologist. She's such a hard worker. She has such high standards, and it all shows. So that is great. And I love the fact that, you know, with Cindy on in the mornings and I'm on in the evenings, there's usually a lot of continuity because the way we go about, forecasting is pretty similar, and so on. Now we have Kellyanne Chickalese, who's on our weekend mornings, and she'll usually fill in for Cindy, and she is really just great. She's such a nice person, and she's bright, also very hard worker. We have Mike Wonkum, and people see Mike a lot because Mike is on our weekend nights, but he's also on Friday nights. And even for part of the year, I've shortened my schedule a little bit, so you see a little bit more of Mike as well. And he's also a very talented guy and very, very personable, a lot of energy. He's been doing this for quite a while as well. And then we have what I'll call our unsung hero in the department, the jack of all trades meteorologist AJ Burnett. You will see AJ on the air occasionally doing weather filling in. But he also has great ability to report live in the field during weather events. He's actually working on a report that's going to air soon on climate change. But he also is a computer graphics whiz. So he does so much of our creative and setup work with our graphic systems and is just a tremendous aid to all of us, and especially me, because it allows me to really focus on forecasting and being on the air as much as I am. And AJ has set up a lot of things for us, a lot of what we would call templates, which it's very easy to just plug in what you need to plug in for that given situation. So it's really a terrific team. All nice people as well, and we need each other because that's the only way you can all have time off. You know, and we do the best we can. We don't really treat it as a seniority thing as much as a need thing. And once in a while, there may be a conflict where two people need the same time or period of time off, and we'll just go by, you know, which is the more important thing on a personal level. But, you know, the ability to work with one another just makes it much better for everybody as well as for the station.
You sound like a head coach talking about his assistant coaches with our sports.
you really do.
I get it. Oh, co-coaches then, all right. And in fact, AJ advised Bill and me about our website quite a bit, so we appreciate that.
There you go. So you see what I mean.
Absolutely.
Really, he's just such a bright guy.
So much more I want to ask you, but I know your time is valuable. I want to ask you, though, one more thing. My wife helps me get dressed because I'm colorblind, so we have to do the Garanimals thing with the different things that match for the ties and so on. But and being a little bit colorblind and not knowing anything about style, I am so impressed the way you look every day with your suits on, and I just have to compliment you on that, and I wish I could do that.
Well, that's amazing. I really appreciate that. But I have to tell you that this is hard for me to explain, but it's only really been in recent years that I've become even more aware of that. So, you know,
yeah.
I do, you know, whatever it is, every 2 years or whatever, upgrade the wardrobe somewhat. I actually, I'm really very involved. I'm actually sensing color combinations. But the ironic thing is, I've never been like that most of my life.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's great. I appreciate that. I don't know, maybe I'm just getting more relaxed about certain things so I can spend some time concentrating on others that I never did my entire life.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because maybe it's, you know, with age comes wisdom or something like that, because I never would have noticed it before, but geez, every day it's like, holy crap, look at this, the way this guy looks. And one other little question that you don't have to answer, but it looks like you've maintained a really good conditioning program. Do you even have time to do that?
Not quite as good as it might look, but I think the part of me that's in the worst shape is partially camouflaged. But anyway, that's where, get the right on the shirt, tie, and jacket. And but anyway.
Well, it says you're an outdoorsman in your bio, so that's what I was alluding to.
Yeah, no, I do love tennis. I really love tennis. And to be honest, last couple of years I haven't played as much in the colder weather. I'm not really a regular member now at an indoor club, but I'll play as a guest occasionally. But I'll play in, the 6 months of the warmer weather as much as I can outside. And really, I've had just minor lower back issues, which most people over 40 have, and just learning, right stretches, which are both stretches and strengthening. So when I'm very good about doing that, I do a lot of stuff for both shoulders. Thankfully, I've never had a rotator cuff tear or anything, but I had, little fraying or whatever. So you learn through physical therapy, and whatever you can then do at home without the equipment that's necessary, doing it makes a huge difference. So I think the stretching routines, I think, are very important, especially as we age.
Yeah, I've learned that also, and my wife's got me doing yoga and core strengthening and all that stuff. And I'm going to tell you something. If you don't give me good ski weather next winter, you're going to hear me screaming from Cape Ann again.
Well, the good news is we should be due after this winter for a better winter in terms of that. The concerning thing long-term, and that's a topic for another day, is long-term averages not working in the right direction if climate change continues and the pattern and the planet continues to gradually warm. But it won't be on an even change. It's not going to be like every year is snowless and warm,
right?
Or every winter. But it may happen a little more frequently in the future than it has in the past.
Well, I hope we can do that another time. But in the meantime, please stay with it. Don't give up your hours, because you're absolutely so much fun to watch. And thank you so much for taking all this time to talk with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And and Josh, next time you have to get more words in edgewise. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, I will, and I appreciate it.